At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the soon-to-be-returning voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew. How are we?
We're not too bad, mate. We're not too bad. More importantly, how are you?
Yeah, good. Good. We are coming to the back end of the window. Has been a quiet window on the whole, although some interesting moves, which I know we're going to touch on at the end of this particular podcast. And yes, I will be returning for deadline day itself. And I've got the fortune of spending some days with your fine self.
So deadline day, you're going to be here?
I am going to be here for deadline day. Well, deadline day is technically Thursday, and I am flying back on the Wednesday to watch Wednesday. There you go. How's that? We are heading up, aren't we, to watch Sheffield Wednesday on the Wednesday, and then busy days in London Thursday, Friday, unless there's any last-minute movement. You never know what might happen on deadline day. And then, going to a game again on Saturday before leaving the country once more on Sunday. So a flying visit.
So then, consider this your warning, your two-day warning. Richard Lee is back in the house, the man they all want to see. So if you do indeed want to see Richard Lee, get it in your diary. Make your contact now, because he, of course, is a man very much in demand.
We could do like a Where's Wally. Like, we'll give prizes for anyone that spots me in and around London. Although actually, it's going to be very boring, so I probably will be sat in the same place both Thursday and Friday for the entire day and just having lots and lots of meetings. But should be good. Should be good. Looking forward to getting back, although I hear the weather's been a little bit hit and miss over the last few weeks.
It's been fresh and crisp. At least where I am, anyway. You know those lovely days which you detest, but I enjoy, that are clear skies. There's a punch in the air, but the sun is breaking through. When you're in it, it's relatively warm, but also freezing cold at the same time.
Apricity, I think that's the word.
Very nice.
It's a good word. I'm pretty sure that's the word. But yeah, no, it should be good. Looking forward to getting back. But you know what I'm looking forward to even more?
Go on.
This podcast. Plenty to get through.
There is plenty to get through. So without further ado, on with the show.
Let's do it.
Okay, Richard, we are going to focus solely on the fourth round of the FA Cup. So we're not going to do an EFL overview this week. There wasn't a full schedule, so we're going to push that to one side. No clean sheet club again this week, but next week we'll be back up and running with a full complement of everything that you love about Between the Sticks. But FA Cup fourth round only this week, plus a little bit of admin at the end of the show. But we'll start at Portman Road, and Ipswich 1, Maidstone United 2. Lucas Kovalan, 12 saves. Commentary absolutely adoring him throughout. Let's just talk about this performance.
Very, very good. Very good. Look, fantastic day for Maidstone. It was, of course, it was enjoyable to watch. In fact, there was a couple of really good ones this weekend. The Man United game as well, when Newport obviously came back to 2-2 at that point. You thought, you know what, could this be? Surely not. Surely not United are going to be 2-2 and lose 3-2 to Newport. That wasn't meant to be, but this was. And look, he was very, very good throughout. It's interesting because you do tend to, and of course it's a natural thing to do when you've got a bigger team against a smaller team. The narrative that surrounds the smaller team is one where, you know, you have all the classic stories of maybe part-time players, they've got another job on the side, they're doing this, that, the other. The interesting thing with Lucas Kovalan is that, you know, as much as they were talking about him as, you know, he's a non-league keeper, which he is currently, there was only a couple of seasons ago, and I need to check if he actually did play against Ipswich, but there was a good chance he played this fixture for Port Vale a couple of years ago. So it's not like a ridiculous thing for him to be playing in a game like this. But of course, and again, maybe that's just lack of them knowing exactly the level he's played at, etc., etc. But again, of course, at the moment as it stands, he's playing for a Conference South team, so he's being regarded in that way. And certainly the commentary, look, don't Don't get me wrong, lots and lots of top saves. Very good one-on-one save. Made a good save low to his right. Tip on the bar was very good. Moved his feet well. Got a good hand on that. The one top left, like a looping header that he's managed to scurry across to and get to. Another save mid-right from memory as well. But you know what? It's one of them. And again, because we're probably watching from a slightly different perspective, it was the accumulation of the saves that made it such a good performance. But I think if you look at each save individually, certainly a goalkeeper of his caliber, someone that, you know, on the face of it, really is a top-end League One goalkeeper, maybe even low-end champ, given the career he's had. And, okay, he's fallen down a little bit over the last couple of years, which he actually touched on in his interview afterwards. But each of these saves, I think if any of these went in, someone of his caliber, he would have been a little bit disappointed. But, of course, when you have, what, 8, 9, 10, whatever the number was, of solid saves in a game, you win the game 2-1, naturally it's going to be a 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10. And so happy for him, because it does sound like he's had a really tough couple of years. To have to drop to Conference South level and find your level there for now, but I've got no doubt that it won't be too long before he's moving back up.
Not taking anything away from his performance here, are you, Richard?
No, not at all. No, not at all. Look, as well, to go to, especially Ipswich, as well as they've been doing, such a good feeling around Ipswich at the moment. So I don't think anyone necessarily saw this as being a potential upset. So, no, to go there and to have the mentality to do what he did, I guess it's more, again, we try and have an objective view. That's what we do on this show, although I know I'm often sort of siding with the goalkeeper. And I was really happy that, you know, even at the end where ball's popped up and he's caught it, and the love that they were giving him, I was really enjoying, because it's not what you normally see. But I just think so much of it surrounds a narrative where it is that nothing to lose game that you're going into. And I remember playing, you know, a couple of my bigger nights or bigger days as a goalkeeper, when we played Everton for Brentford, was a good example where there isn't too much to lose. You're such big underdogs that even some of the saves that you might make that aren't outstanding are being seen as outstanding because of the circumstance. But no, look, taking nothing away from it at all, because like I say, tough place to go to get the victory in the way that they did. Two shots on target. I mean, it was a classic smash and grab. I'm sure that the XG would have been heavily weighted towards Ipswich. So again, you need a big personality, a big character to play in a game like that. And he certainly was on the day.
Did you play against Everton, did you, back in the day?
Have I not mentioned that, no?
No, do you know what? I was only messing when I said about you taking something away from his performance, because, yeah, you're right. And this is where sometimes I think we shoot ourselves in the foot, because we bleat on about commentary corner. But then the moment a goalkeeper does get a bit of credit, we tend to look at it the other way, where we say, well, it's great that you're giving him the credit, but actually what he's doing is normally what you'd say he should be expected to be doing. I think the one at the end of the game, like you said, I think it was the looping header where it just fell into his arms. And there's Lucas Kovalac. Where else would he be? Where else would that ball be? It's like a magnet to his hands. Well, yeah, that's great. But essentially, he just collected quite a routine header. But it is brilliant to hear. The interview after the game was really good too. And I hate to be a killjoy for Maidstone United here, but we did have a tweet in from Baldy who asked us about the positioning of Christian Walton for the first and second goal. I think we'll ignore the first goal, but the second goal, I don't think I've seen this mentioned anywhere. It may have been mentioned somewhere on socials, but I hadn't seen it. But the second goal scored by Sam Corn. Great finish, great goal. However, the finish was slightly fortunate. And I'm going to throw this in to be a spawny goal of the week contender, which is terrible for me, terrible for Maidstone. I understand that. But if you look closely, as Sam Corn is about to connect with that ball and as Christian Walton has advanced, it just nicks off his right boot before he connects with his left foot. When he shot, I thought, there's something not right about this. I just thought, there's something not right about this goal. And when you saw the slow motion replay, it could have been awful for him, because if he connected just slightly more, he would have swung with his left, the classic one where he then completely misses the ball. But luckily for him, he managed to connect on this occasion. Do you think that that made a difference for Christian Walton?
I think it would have made a bit of a difference. I always look at the goalkeeper's positioning. I know we're going to talk about Josh Griffiths shortly, because he got a lot of stick for his positioning, which I felt was a little bit harsh. And again, we'll talk about that shortly. Look, it's one of them where, as they're coming in the way that he was, naturally you're drawn towards the ball. Christian Walton's a big guy, and if he can get close enough and he can spread, there's a very good chance, percentage chance, that he makes a save here. Now, when the ball does go in, you then look at it and naturally like, oh, could he have got a bit closer? Or maybe if he's a little bit deeper, does he give himself a bit more chance to react to the shot itself? You know, I know Roy Keane was talking about Griffiths. In fact, let's touch on Griffiths now, because there's possibly similarities here where, you know, Roy Keane, I think the comment was that it was kind of the classic, if you're going to come, do a positive action, come all the way, etc., which again isn't necessarily the right thing to do. But sometimes that can happen where you're in a position and you're not necessarily deep enough to react to the shot itself. And similarly, you're possibly not quite close enough to get a significant shape to then make the block. This happens slightly here, but again, we're talking a foot, 2 feet, you know, in terms of where he would like to have been in that very position. And it's tough. Someone's bearing down on goal. It's reliant on their touch. It's reliant on how they strike the ball, etc., etc. So I certainly wouldn't label any blame towards Christian Walton, in the same way that I don't really put any blame towards Griffiths. You know, I think it's one of them that he had a split second where maybe he could have got a couple of yards closer. He would have been a long way out of his goal. It might have been one of them at that point where the guy squares it and then people are questioning why he's so advanced. Similarly, as that ball's coming through, does he then drop and get a little bit closer towards the near post? But again, it all happens in such a split second. I think the position that Griffiths was in, similar to Christian Walton, wasn't terrible, and you still can make the save from there. You've still got a high percentage chance of making the save from there. But unfortunately, in both cases, it wasn't the case.
Yes, he unfortunately found himself back in no man's land, didn't he? That mythical place that we've certainly heard of before. But speaking of Roy Keane, I'm referring to the game between Tottenham and Man City. It was 1-0 to City, and the winning goal scored by Nathan Ake was apparently the fault of Guglielmo Vicario. And Keane saying that Vicario should have come with violence. Now, I think he said this before, although this time he referred to his source, which I believe would have been Seamus McDonough. He did say a goalkeeper coach that I used to work with, Seamus, so I'm presuming that is Seamus McDonough, used to say, you've got to come with violence. And that's what Keane was saying that Vicario should have done for this. So for the third podcast in a row, Richard, foul or no foul on the goalkeeper? I'll quickly go to the Twitter sphere first, because we did put this out. Ultimate Keeper says no foul. The goalkeeper wasn't in control of the situation at any phase leading to the goal. The number one rule is that the goalkeeper cannot allow the opposition to hinder his vision or movement. He should have had a defender in between to solve the problem. Richard Gandy says he should be doing better on the goal, but Diaz was going in on him, making attempts for the ball on all City's corners. The ref didn't want to know. Neil Selman, not a foul for me. It's a poor starting position. I read the great Ray Clements book on goalkeeping. Take several steps back. Then you've got a running jump at the ball rather than a standing jump. Stephen Jones, no foul. He's got to be a bit stronger there for me. Jonathan Ellerton, foul. He jumped into him. Alan E. 1878, not for me, Brian. Like that one. Stephen at Malloy 30 says, foul on keeper. If keeper tries to be stronger and pushes the player, it's a penalty. And Eric N., no foul. Just weak goalkeeping from Vicario. So yet again, really, the Twitter sphere is split.
Yeah, and you know what? I'll probably sit somewhere in the middle, because I think, here we go, we'll talk about VAR, but I think if this was given as a foul, I don't think VAR overturns it in the same way that it didn't overturn it with it not being given a foul. I think the difficult thing here is it's such a good ball. Such a good ball. Like, it's whipped in. It's too low to kind of get your hands above the striker's head and get hands to it. It's dipping into that area where you're kind of hoping you've got a teammate that might be able to help you out. You know, I used to, and again, a lot of goalkeepers have this, where the person that's on them, they have someone stood the other side, and this would be a perfect example where that ball that's whipped in exactly like this, they'd probably be able to get there first and clear it. So it's a real tough one. I don't know what more Vicario can do. I get the point of, yeah, if you can have a running jump, but I think when you've got somebody that stood on you like that, for a start, you're not going to have the time to take a step back to then come forward and have momentum. So you are effectively just wrestling with them on the line and just trying to get your hands in front of them in some way to get something on it, which he did to an extent. You know, and the argument for that could then be, well, it, you know, is it a foul then in that he's impeding him? But this is where I think it sits right in the middle. I don't think the lad did too much wrong. He was quite cute in terms of how he dealt with it. You know, different for me than the one that we spoke about last week with Dean Henderson, where I think that was very blatant. I think similarly, the James Traffer one we spoke about recently at Luton, I think that was very blatant. I think with this, he's been a little bit cuter. He has blocked him. There's not a great deal more Vicario can do. It is a frustrating one, and naturally people will then question, can the goalkeeper do more? But I come back to that question, like, what more can you do? You're being blocked in. You can't quickly get round the player and get there in front. So yeah, effectively your best bet is having one of your players stood in front and trying to help you out with a situation like this.
I guess that's where this type of situation is quite a grey area then, right? Because you've even said yourself that you're not quite sure how similar they are. So what's your cutoff point? What's your cutoff point between a foul and no foul?
It's a really grey area. It's one that, and as a goalkeeper, you hate these because you know straight away it doesn't look good. You know, as soon as commentators get hold of it, of course they're going to question the goalkeeper. But I come back to that question, what more can you do? When the ball's whipped in and it's such, like I say, such a good ball, it's got pace on it, it's dipping all the time, it's never going to be high enough to catch it. What more can you actually physically do in this moment? So I think there are going to be situations like this as a goalkeeper that you almost need to accept that people are going to cast it as a mistake. But even if you had that situation again, there might not necessarily be anything you could do differently. It just is what it is.
Okay, and just to clear up the first clump of FA Cup fourth round ties, Georgi Petrovic, fine save from Matty Cash in the goalless draw between Chelsea and Aston Villa. George Long, he was on the losing side, 5-2 on the wrong end of a 5-2 scoreline in the game between Liverpool and Norwich. But he did make a great double save, so we will mention it, from Diogo Jota and Ryan Gravenberch later on in that one. We've already spoken about Josh Griffiths and the second goal scored by Matheus Cunha for Wolves. He did make a really good save from the same man a few moments later in that game. But I think it's worth mentioning the fact that he was referred to as a cup goalkeeper. Not really a cup goalkeeper, Josh Griffiths, but certainly a number two at the moment, of which 14 were utilised in this round. So of the 16 ties played, 14 second goalkeepers were utilised. We mentioned Griffiths there. There's Backman, Lumley, Long, Fisher, Travers, Charles, Wilson, Ortega, Walton, Virginia, Krul, Stolarczyk and Rodak. So some teams opting for that second choice, other teams sticking with their number one. And also, if we are to continue to refer to goalkeepers as being a protected species, not us, of course, people in other quarters, can we now refer them to the challenge made by Connor Townsend on José Sarr in the first half of that game, which I personally, he didn't get a booking for this, thought was rather shocking.
I would agree. And they didn't really give it too much appreciation on the commentary either. You know, they made one or two comments, but yeah, really, really poor challenge. He would never get into the ball. José Sarr was way ahead of him and had control of the situation. And yeah, he's effectively clotheslined him from behind. So not great. And yeah, to mention a couple of others, like I say, top save from Petrovic down low to his right fingertips. George Long didn't have a great deal of chance. Watch this game, didn't have a great deal of chance with the goals. The double save, the second save in particular, is excellent. That's one of those where there's not a great deal you can do, so you just try and put yourself in the best possible position. He's flung himself to his right and it's kind of hit his underarm and gone out. Brilliant, brilliant save right on the line itself. Josh Griffiths, we touched on the commentary, and actually even that, because that annoyed me a little bit where they spoke about him. You know, he is effectively the cup goalkeeper, which he is, but then there's also, I guess it's one of them where we have that much more knowledge of a lot of these goalkeepers. You know, he's a top young goalkeeper, a goalkeeper that's got all the attributes to go to the Premier League, and I'm sure at some point he'll find himself in the Premier League. But I guess naturally the likes of Roy Keane, etc., they're not going to have the insight that we have. And it's never easy, by the way. We've spoke about this a lot as well. It's good that they're being given these games. It gives them an opportunity to get an outing and to get their eye in. But it is very tough when you don't play regularly to step in for a game of that magnitude, you know, especially a derby like that, with obviously the tension, the passion, which obviously we saw with the fans coming onto the pitch, etc. But I thought on the whole we did well, and that save he made to his right was a top save. You know, positioning was excellent, the power to get to his right hand side, that's going right in the corner. You know, not many goalkeepers make this save, but to get fingertips to that, put it around the post, yeah, I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, it was. And I agree with you on that whole cup goalkeeper tag as well. Josh Griffiths isn't a cup goalkeeper. I can understand to those outside looking in that it might seem that way, but he's not a cup goalkeeper. This is a guy who's played, what, 100 plus games now in the EFL, loan spells with Cheltenham, with Portsmouth, with Lincoln. So plenty of games under his belt, and no doubt the long-term vision for West Brom to be their number one should Alex Palmer eventually move on, or indeed, like you say, if he moves in, but absolutely not a cup goalkeeper. And there was a moment in this game as well, wasn't there, with Lee Dixon? It's funny, isn't it, when these FA Cup games occur, you just get the sense that it's the first time any of these people have ever seen these goalkeepers. This guy's a championship goalkeeper. And also, it's a game that you're covering, so you should have been aware of who he is before you actually turned up to the game. I think there was a moment where Lee Dixon said, oh, Crikey, he's a big lad, isn't he? That Griffiths, he's a big old fella. You must have a number for me. What's the figure? Go on, tell me, Sam Matterface, what's the figure? We should know that, Lee. Do your research. You're covering this goalkeeper at the weekend. Do your research. But yes, to be expected. Let's get on with the next clump. So Piers Charles, a big debut at 18 years old for Sheffield Wednesday. Made a really good late save in this one. It was a 1-1 draw with Coventry denying Jamie Allen, point blank, really good save, that one. Bart Verbruggen made an unnoticed save, an uncredited save from James McAtee. So Brighton smashing Sheffield United at Bramall Lane 5-2. But yeah, he tipped this one onto the bar, I think. Just got a little touch that wasn't picked up by the commentators. Really, really good save, this one. Potentially a save of the round contender. Joao Virginia, if we are going to talk about cup goalkeepers, I guess you could refer to him as one of those, stepping in on a rare occasion for Jordan Pickford. Had a good game on the losing side, however, to Luton, for whom Tim Krul let one just slip under his tummy. That was a shot from Jack Harrison. There were very similar strikes in the draw between Watford and Southampton. So Dan Backman and Joe Lumley. Good to see Joe back in action. It's been a while, so good to see him between the sticks. But both goalkeepers caught out on their front post. But Lumley also making a really good stop late on in that one. A vital stop, really. It was 1-0 at the time. This one from Mateus Martins. That kept Saints in the tie. And Martin Dubravka with a second successive FA Cup clean sheet. That was kept due to a really good low stop down to his right from Rodrigo Muniz. But just thought we would mention him because there has been plenty of transfer talk at Newcastle this month, no less with that number one spot. It was thought that they might bring someone in, but it looks as though with what, just under 3 days of the window to go, that Dubravka will remain the number one.
Yeah, I think there's a good chance. And in fairness, he's done, you know, he's done well in the games. I think that probably goes back to what we said at the start of the show, where it has been, on the whole, a quiet transfer window for goalkeepers. I mean, it's been a very quiet transfer window on the whole when you look at the figures from last year compared to this year. And I think a lot, there is the financial fair play, and certainly with what's happened to Everton and the threats that sit over Everton again and Notts Forest, I think a lot of clubs are being very, very careful this window. And I think that will play a part in this. Plus, I think the fact that, you know, Dubravka has done very well, certainly over the last few weeks, you know, that could solve their issue going into the second half of the season. And look, this is a goalkeeper that's played however many games in the Premier League. Until Nick Pope came in and has done what he's done, he was very much and is a number one Premier League goalkeeper. So I don't think they've got any serious issues there. You mentioned a few others there. Yeah, Joe Lumley, really pleased that he's getting some game time at Southampton. Pretty much secured that number two spot behind Gavin Batsunu, and being given the cup games, which is great to see. Very good performance on the whole. A little bit frustrated with the goal. I know we spoke about the wall last week, didn't we, with the Notts Forest game. With this one, and it is one where, how many people do you put in the wall? And there's lots of different thoughts towards this. If it's out wide and there's one person on the ball, then you might just go one person. If you have two people on the ball, you might go two, because they could play it short. When it gets that little bit more central, sometimes you go to three, sometimes you go to four. And I think here it was as simple as that, that he's gone with one, with the likelihood being that it'd be a cross. But of course, the lad's seen this and realised that there's an opportunity just to try and fire it into that near post. And he's done it brilliantly, to be fair. Whipped it around the one-man wall. Whereas if you had the two in the wall, I think it would have made it, for a start, it would have made him more likely to cross it, because that near post wouldn't have been as exposed. But as you say, top save to his left-hand side. Takes a big deflection, moves well, gets those fingertips to get it onto the post. And of course, getting that late equaliser helped ensure that they've got a replay in this one. And it was a top save from Bart Verbruggen, as you say, definitely didn't get any credit, because without that tiny touch, the fact that it's then bounced down and effectively hit the line before it went out, that tiny, tiny touch was the difference between it going in or not.
And finally, to wrap up the FA Cup action, good to see Altay in for Manchester United. We mentioned this on the last podcast. Looked solid, I thought. A solid 7 in all regards of his game. Played really well. Manchester United just nicking a victory at Newport. But it also looks like that will be it for Altay, because Cameroon were dumped out of AFCON, for whom Andre Onana played just the one game. So after that whole brouhaha of him staying at Manchester United and then going to AFCON, he missed that first game, played the second game. That was a defeat to Senegal. And then he was on the bench for the games against Gambia and Nigeria. The next two, they lost to Nigeria. They're now out. So it's highly likely that he will be back in nets for United's next game.
Yeah, crazy story. The fact that he made such efforts after, I think it was the Spurs game, wasn't it? Such efforts to get out there seemingly has fallen out with the coach or whatever it might be, and yeah, rarely featured. So be interesting when he does come back. But the fact that Altai has got this game, whether that now gives him that little bit of credit, no doubt will close the gap between the two. And as you say, I thought he was good. It was quite interesting in that, was it Garnacho? When Garnacho hit the bar, that all started with a brilliant pass where the ball's come into him and he's kind of gone back on himself, through the two strikers into the sitting midfielder. Off they went. Two passes later, they've hit the bar. But he didn't really get any credit for that. If anything, it was he's got away with one there. And actually, that's the great example of where it's risk and reward. You know, we see a lot of the teams that are trying to play this style of football, and sometimes when it goes wrong, of course it gets highlighted. But that's a great example of when the goalkeeper nails a pass like that, and yet it's very, very risky. But of course, the moment he completes that pass, United then had like a 4-on-4. You know, and so if anything, that is brilliant, brilliant goalkeeping, but didn't get any mention thereafter when Garnacho goes through. Probably should have squared it and they would have scored, but he hits the bar. Doesn't get any credit for that at all. If anything, the only thing he got from that sequence of play was he got away with one there.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
GK's on the way. I say GK's on the way. GK's on the way. I say GK's on the way.
Yes, there have been some more goalkeeping switcheroos, and they are a smattering of loans until the end of the season. Craig McGillivray going from MK Dons to Stevenage, Michael McGovern from Hearts to Livingston, Philip Marshall from Aston Villa to MK Dons, and Radi Vitek from Manchester United to Accrington. A deal until the end of the season sees Lewis Ward leave Swindon and head to Charlton. Elsewhere on permanence, Scott Morris has gone from Christchurch to Stoke, Stephen Hall from Adelaide United to Brighton, Ivor Pandor from Fortuna Sittard to Hull, that's on a 3.5-year deal, and Ivo Garbic from Atletico Madrid to Sheffield United, 2027, that deal runs to. And finally, there is one more, Hakon Valdemarsson from Elfsborg to Brentford, and that is a deal until 2028.
Some interesting ones there, and quite pleasing to see. You know, we talk about the January window, it's very much a loan window on the whole. We've had a couple of permanents, as you've touched on there, sort of three in particular. Certainly Gribbich to Sheffield United, really interested to see how he gets on. Pandor to Hull, I don't think anyone really saw this one coming, given that they've got Matt Ingram and Ryan Allsopp there. So again, they've now got essentially three first choice goalkeepers. Valdemarsson is an interesting one because again, they've got the two goalkeepers there already, so they're going to have a very strong goalkeeping department now. You do wonder what might happen then with a couple of the goalkeepers underneath, whether they'll have late loans. But it's pleasing to see as well some of these younger goalkeepers that are now getting their opportunities out at clubs. The likes of Philip Marshall will be getting game time for Milton Keynes, of course, with Mike Williamson previously at Gateshead. And Vitek as well, someone that I don't know a great deal about, but I know that very highly rated United should get some good game time at Accrington.
Yes, one of the many Czechs to have played as a goalkeeper in English football. Okay, Richard, we have just a few more bits and pieces to finish off because you've got to get to all your WhatsApps, haven't you? How many WhatsApps do you think you've got on your phone at the moment?
Oh, I don't even want to know, but it normally can go anywhere up to 100 unread during the day, and then I try and clear it all up in the morning. So I did get it down to 0 this morning, but no doubt by the time we finish this, and I do have my phone on Do Not Disturb for this period of time, but no doubt it'll be up at 30, 35, I'm sure.
Okay, although we have been disturbed, haven't we, by various activity going on outside of your house as we speak. So if you have heard some disturbance in the recording of this podcast, Richard Lee can explain why.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's like fighter jets or something that keep coming by. So I keep having to pause. That plus my little dog Coco at the start of the podcast was snoring. So if you did hear that, I can only apologise.
Okay, let's just wrap this up with some admin. AFCON, the 17th and 18th penalties in the tie between DR Congo and Egypt were taken by goalkeepers. One was scored, one was missed. So it was Gabanski missing the spot kick for Egypt, crashing the bar to then see Lionel Mpassi scoring for DR Congo. They go into the last eight to face Guinea. A lovely penalty from Mpassi.
It really was. Firstly, I felt for Gabanski in that he really has tried to find the top corner, you know, and he actually sent the goalkeeper the wrong way, but absolutely fired it towards the top corner, hits the bar, as you mentioned. But yeah, brilliant penalty from Mbassi. You know, normally, I suppose the Gabanski penalty is what you'd normally see from a goalkeeper, kind of smash it towards a corner. Normally, the power will be enough and, you know, you normally can be successful. But Mpassi, this was like someone who has definitely been practicing penalties in his spare time, because he's walked up and he's actually watched the goalkeeper go one way and he's put it the other way. I thought it was brilliant.
Yes, it really was. And speaking of penalties, George Vickens on loan at Ross County from Fulham with two penalty saves in what ended up being a defeat for Ross County against Celtic. But a retaken penalty from Lewis Palmer, and Vickens was not to be beaten, not once nor twice.
Yeah, brilliant performance, by the way. I actually streamed this game, watched the entire game, and he was phenomenal throughout. Felt for him and he had no chance for the goal. Deflection killed him. Then after that, the amount of saves he made, there was a brilliant save he made. The penalty, first and foremost, you always kind of felt quite confident looking at him. And he makes that first save. He was really unfortunate that he wasn't the one. It was obviously the players that encroached. He was like, his strategy on it was perfect. Still had a foot on the line. And then it's that one, that kind of, okay, what do they do second time round? Gone to do the same thing. It was actually a better penalty second time round as well. Gets full stretch down to his right. Big hand on it. But there was a couple of other saves he made. There was one in particular that, I don't know if you've seen it, but it was point blank. And it was almost a bit Schmeichel-esque, where he's just sort of waved an arm at it and managed to get like a forearm, put it over the bar. Brilliant, brilliant save.
Yes, really was. And just to send our best wishes to Russell Holt, the former Derby, Portsmouth, West Brom goalkeeper, amongst others. He's been diagnosed with a chronic liver condition. That was announced by the West Brom Former Players Association last week. So yes, our thoughts and wishes go to you, Russell. Get well soon. And also to Little Thomas. So this was a tweet sent in to us by John Wagstaff, who says that Thomas plays football for the under-11s team that I manage. For the past two seasons, he's been playing with a foot injury, but now booked in to have corrected. He's been absolutely fantastic for us and is very upset to be missing out for the next 3 months for recovery. So any words of advice, Richard, for Little Thomas about what he can do in that 3 months?
Yeah, do you know what? It's something that I encountered my fair share of injuries. It's always frustrating, but I think once you've kind of got over the fact that you are going to be out for a period of time, it's always a case of, okay, what else can I focus on that ensures that when I do come back, I am that much better for it? So, for example, if it is a foot injury, it might be something where, look, watching football is always something I'd recommend, trying to learn the tactical side of the game that much more. Whether there's anything you do that isn't necessarily going to impact your foot, so it might be working on your throwing. Again, I say this and there's a chance that he can't put his foot on the ground at all. But of course, if there's anything that you can do that other areas of the game, stuff that we used to do when I'd have like leg issues, you know, even just sat down doing like handling drills, or even if you're on your knees and you're rolling it or throwing it against the wall, just working on your W's and working on different techniques, collapse diving, etc. Again, doing it with precaution and physio's advice and making sure that you're okay to do those types of things. But it is just a case of being creative and finding things that ensure that when you do come back, because you will, and you'll come back stronger, that you do come back in a really good place.
Absolutely. Get well soon, Thomas. And we shall finish where we started, Richard, because we didn't mention this at the top when we were speaking about Lucas Kovalan. But if a world record is up for grabs, which I think it is because it is held by Edison, I believe, for the longest ever kick, Lucas Kovalan will now be in there, because the final, pretty much the final touch of that game against Ipswich, he absolutely launched one. If you want danger to be cleared from your own area, wow. This went pretty much to the corner flag from Lucas Kovalan, and the ref eventually blew his whistle, but he got some distance on that.
do you know what? I think that's that moment. And again, goalkeepers listening in, we've all been there where you know it's towards the end. You're aware that you're in injury time and you've got the ball in your hands. And it's a little bit nerve-wracking because you're thinking, like, just don't mess this one up. You could imagine, like, a bad kick in the last minute and they break through. But like you say, I think with that additional adrenaline, just knowing that if he can nail this, it's done. And it's complete. The final whistle goes and then all the adulation and everything that comes after it. And credit to him, he's absolutely nailed it. There was no chance that Ipswich were gonna break after that kick.
Excellent. Richard, we'll let you get back to proceedings. Anything juicy likely to happen within the next 72 hours or so that we shall be reporting on next week?
Potentially. There's, again, it's that kind of place when you always get a little bit of madness last few days, but a lot of clubs, it's a case of X needs to go before we can bring Y in, essentially. So there's still potentially another little merry-go-round. The jigsaw might play out a little bit more, but then similarly, nothing might happen. That's essentially where we are. So it might be that we're talking about five or six more, or it might just be a case of a quiet end to the window. We shall see.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, keepers.
Wait.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.